down time.
The provocation during the political spectacle is further intensified in this issue's title, 3 billion perverts.
I'm very pleased to introduce Elena Vogtmann. Elena is a media theorist and independent curator. She directs the research project Madness Media Milieus, Reconfiguring the Humanities in Postwar Europe at Bauhaus University Weimar since 2021, and is a visiting fellow at the Institute for Cultural Inquiry in Berlin. Her research focuses on the field of critical psychiatry, feminist and post-colonial theory, with an emphasis on film and media. And there is a forthcoming book that is right now in the making. An essay version will soon be published, apparently, on geopsychiatry. Elena has also published two books on Sergei Eisenstein, one titled Sinnliches Denken, Eisensteins Exzentrische Methode, Sensuous Thinking, Eisenstein's Eccentric Method, 2018. The other is titled Dance of Values, Sergei Eisenstein's Capital Project, 2019.
Responding to Isabel's kind invitation to join this conference on queer Tosqueyes, my initial idea was to trace his vagabonding and non-normative politics of the body, initiated in his experience of extensive psychiatry with Emilia Miroi López in Reus and continued in his geopsychiatric and decolonial approach to institutions and clinical care in Saint-Alban. Then turning to the 1973 publication of the 12th issue of the Cerfi-run journal Recherche, titled 3 milliards de pervers, une grande encyclopédie des homosexualités. My plan initially was to trace the continuities between institutional psychotherapy's reversal of pathology and norm and its non-reductionist and non-identitarian approach to the body, the model of psychotic body in particular, and Recherche's scathing critique of the normalizing politics of sexuality, identity, and gender. However, as a result, my reading discovered some crucial differences between this publication and its political claims and Tosqueyes' approach to sexuality and gender, while revealing a continuity between Trois Milliards de Pervers and the history of queer movement as it emerged in the wake of the 1980s AIDS epidemic, where queer marked actually a very clearly a struggle of resistance to the normalizing and naturalizing ideas of gender and sexuality in a political gesture of reappropriating the word queer, which previously marked an insult. An irreducible document of a struggle of gay, lesbian, and trans movements, the 12th issue of Recherche invites us to speculate on the limits of the constellation queer Tosqueyes, a limit historically traced by a movement that the psychiatry, but also psychoanalysis of the time, failed to endorse. So in the first step, I will still trace some elements of Tosqueyes' approach to the body and to sexuality. And in the second, I will read and contextualize the 12th issue of Recherche in its relation to psychoanalysis, queer, and institutional psychotherapy. As it has been underlined yesterday, Tosqueyes' political and psychiatric formation is interwoven with the history of resistance to the rise of Nazism and fascism in Europe, movements promoting and enacting euthanasia and extermination of mental health patients, along with other groups considered as biologically inferior, inactive, or incurable. This history has significantly informed Tosqueyes' trajectory, not only his experience of the Spanish Civil War, migration, and exile, but also a series of experiments in extensive psychiatry practiced together with Emili Miroi López, professor of psychiatry at the University of Barcelona and Tosqueyes' friend and colleague at Pere Mata. The milieu of Barcelona, becoming between 1931 and 36 a little Vienna, was equally its consequence, a city welcoming psychiatrists and psychoanalysts fleeing Thatcherism, including Werner Wolf, Sandor Eimender, Ferenc Oliver Brachfeld, and Alfred Strauss, to just name a few. So extensive psychiatry was marked by this political climate. It constituted an interdisciplinary approach that expanded psychiatric therapy through the integration of psychoanalysis, psychotechnics, gestalt psychology, pedagogy, and training in scenarios of justice within socially constructed pragmatic spaces, both inside and outside the clinic. As early as in 1934, Mira not only introduced Tousquieres to Lacan and his dissertation on paranoid psychosis in its relation with personality, he also developed a method of myokinetic diagnosis, or psychodiagnosis, as Angela has greatly shown yesterday, which studied bodily motion and kinetic function of the muscular tone. Mira envisioned a science of expression which could measure the individual's intentions of the body as intentions, that is, internal tensions recorded in the muscular sphere. And I would like to quote Emir Emily Lopez from his book Psychiatry in War, which was published only in 43, but which looks back at the experiments of extensive psychiatry. And my kind of my hypothesis is that here is already a lot of what Tousquieres would practice at Saint-Alban. So Mira writes, when reading about the motor theory of consciousness, and especially when thinking about the viewpoint of dynamic psychology, or topology as Scott Levine calls it, I concluded that there is not only an art of expression, but also the possibility of a science of expression, and that a careful observation of the postures and gestures of any individual may do much to reveal his or her inner attitudes, despite a voluntary intention to simulate or to dissimulate. Mira's emphasis on the bodily dynamic, social positionality, and individuals' postures and gestures in a given field had three significant implications of theoretical, clinical, but also political scope, which I want to quickly draft here. They can be traced in Tousquieres' later contributions to geopsychiatry as a method of institutional psychotherapy. First, as Angela Militopoulos analyzed in her great PhD thesis, Ways of Meaning, Machinic Animism, and the Revolutionary Practice of Geopsychiatry, unlike the 19th and 20th century behaviorism and engineering psychology, which viewed the human body as a machine or motor controlled by the brain, Mira's myokinetic studies perceived muscular contractions as movements occurring prior to psychic events. This insight into the agency of the somatic sensory dimensions allowed Tousquieres to regard those bodily expressions as equal or even prior to language. In this sense, Mira continued the intellectual tradition of Hermann von Helmholtz, who experimentally established in the mid-19th century the gap between stimulus and response, as it has been revealed in Henning's study on the Helmholtz curves. So this insight into the somatic agency later led Tousquieres to a unique spatial, gestural, and relational redefinition of psychoanalytic notion of transference, Übertragung, which we can trace genealogically, I think, also in group analysis and other interventions. Second, as Mira further develops, the attention directed to muscular tone showed prolific effects in the frame of what he calls occupational therapy in psychiatric settings, which Tousquieres will later reframe as ergotherapy. And I quote again Mira, the performance of new movements would destroy the distorted patterns of muscular reaction that have become fixed and rigid in the individuals, thus creating the possibility of the corresponding change in their frame of mind. So, and the third is the emphasis on bodily dynamic, which Mira's observation situated in a field in which Tousquieres experienced as a refugee, of course, also as a refugee in Septfonds. This led him to consider the human as always a migrant, the type who goes elsewhere. In consequence, as Tousquieres says, it's a quote from his interview, École de Liberté, what matters is the trajectory. Far from deciphering any characterological essence in bodily movement and expression, which was also kind of a big topic of the time, Tousquieres wrote those as indicators of the freedom to roam. So the first human right is a right to wander the earth, he claimed. This exemplary right to migration, transition, and even vagabondage was opposed to colonial occupation of territory or psychic exclusion from any milieu of living. So I think we should see those as connected. It introduced an understanding of psychiatry as a creative intervention and decolonial reappropriation of a human geography, a notion itself deeply marked by the colonial geographical endeavors at that time. For instance, Ratzel's Anthropogeographie, which basically was the foundation for human geography as a term. In a series of photomontages produced by Tousquieres, probably with photographer Jacques Matrasso, around 1943 at Saint-Albin testify to such a somatic reversal. These images were presented by Carles Guérange on Amazon, the frame of the great exhibition, Francesc Tasquelles, Like a Sewing Machine in a Wet Field. These montages undertake an inversion of perspective, of course echoing surrealism and intertwining themes of migration and exile. Titled Hypocritical Method, the series shows three distinct superimposed photographic variations. The first two present a juxtaposition of a pair of feet with the doctor's figure, where the enlargement of the feet challenges any straightforward association with the figure. Such a disproportion evokes the body liberated from its conventional organization, maybe a prelude to the idea of body without organs, a notion not explicitly articulated by Tasquelles despite his contemporaneous visits to Antonin Artaud, however. Artaud will later himself think it's only in 48, right? He writes, to be done with the judgment of God. So this inversion of perspective, as also Carles and Joanna suggested in their exhibition, might echo Georges Bataille's exploration of the abased part of the body, the big toe, as exemplified here in André Boisfard's photographs accompanying the 1929 essay for the heterodox surrealist journal Document. In the work of Tasquelles and Matarazzo, feet supplant the traditional position of the head, with the figure positioned as if to tickle the oversized feet. The final image presents a profiled face bisected by a shadow and accompanied by a caption in Catalan suggesting an idyllic respite. The visual distortions find their foundation in the dream logic described by Freud, of course. The manipulation of visual norms akin to the unconscious processes hints at Tosquea's revaluation of knowledge emerging from displacement and migration, challenging the primacy of reason and intellect. In light of Tosquea's hypocritical methods, of course also Dalí's paranoiac critical method, a technique developed in the 30s as a parapsychic mode of production in the visual field, makes completely new sense. Dalí's exchange with Lacan, as also testified in the latter's dissertation, Paranoid Psychosis, is politicized through Tosquelles' perspective on psychiatry as migrant work, a work of geopsychiatric resistance to mental and social alienation. However, despite their critical challenging of the stratified body and politicizing of its base and devalued parts, the approaches evoked by Tosquelles' collage, in particular its psychoanalytic implications, ultimately presumed an essentialized and binary understanding of gender. Addressing homosexuality and transgender, psychoanalysis has rather contributed to a normalization of the cisgenders. As several theorists and psychoanalysts have emphasized, maybe most recently Avgi Sacchetolupo and Anne Pellegrini in their book Gender Without Identity, atypical genders were and are still considered by psychoanalysts a priori as abnormal, basically, and as such result of a trauma. This trauma is theorized as a fluctuation of a normative gender, and more precisely as a warping normal gender to produce a distorted one. There are several examples of such classical psychoanalytic manipulation of gender difference in Tosquelles, a difference where homosexuality, as he writes, latent, repressed, or actualized, depending on the circumstances, is found behind any elevated and obsessive desire for power. I want to point to one particular example where Tasquelles continues this Freudian line of thought while speculating on how he himself could avoid becoming homosexual. According to this undated text titled L'approche des formes, An Approach to Forms, he motivates his trajectory by his early contact with women. So I'm quoting Tosquelles. Fortunately for my future, in the library of the Centre de Lectura, there were women and young girls, and café next to the theatre. My father did not limit himself to introducing me, as in some more or less primitive tribes, to the men's house. He also introduced me to the actress's dressing room, particularly one who played the yacht of a prince. It is true that I have added here how in Selva del Camp, a village where my uncle and godfather practiced medicine, I was welcomed by a woman with whom I maintained mutual exploratory contacts. The homosexual drift of certain groups of young people, especially among those excluded from more or less established social conviviality, plays a prominent role in the bonds at work in these groups of young people where violence becomes a daily bread. There is a missing father figure everywhere, and everywhere there is a cruel father to whom one obeys and whom one destroys in everything one finds that represents him. The heterosexual encounter is here presented as a social constellation preventing from the traumatic triangle between narcissism, the will to power, leading and conditioning homosexual relations. The latter find themselves associated with power relations and the missing father figure, a triangle theorized by Freud and by the psychotherapist and founder of individual psychology, Alfred Adler. And I want to thank Carlos for pointing to me the persistent presence of this author in Tosquia's work. So in Adler's 1917 book, Das Problem der Homosexualität, this notorious problem begins with feelings of inferiority in childhood, which are fostered by misguided upbringing, a dominant mother, a lack of a father figure, or disappointing experiences with the same gender peers. Even though psychoanalysis rejects the biological or innate homosexuality, which is, I think, really is very important here as well, it transposes it into the individual and social development as a deviation from the heterosexual norm. So despite this binary manipulation of gender difference, institutional psychotherapy has, of course, crucially politicized psychoanalysis while translating it into a clinical context of psychosis. Guattari emphasized that the month he spent at Saint-Alban in 1956 had a crucial impact on his institutional practice at Labor, described in terms of a mutation and decentering of subjectivity. The historical and social foundation of psychosis was at odds with the psychoanalytic reductionism and structural superposition on family and myth. This rearticulation famously served an important framework for Deleuze and Guattari's anti-Oedipe and the critique of psychoanalysis there. Dismantling the Oedipal family's values as the theater of the unconscious went hand in hand with a revaluation of social, political, and cultural factors in the production of desire. From this perspective, not only psychotic experience, but also any individual or family are seen as directly investing, I quote, a social, historical, economic, and political field. This field can be understood in holistic terms as an open milieu or environment that is not pre-existing but is co-constitutive of the individuals or organism inhabiting it, emerging in a way which is, according to anti-Oedipe, inherently political. So I'm now coming to my second part, where I will speak about politics of the body as a strategy of disidentification in the 12th issue of Recherche. So Recherche was a journal initiated by Serfi, Militant Analysis Collective Equipment and Institutional Programming, a self-managed research collective organized around Guattari, which brought together students, militant groups, and professionals from the areas of psychiatry, architecture, and education. This extension of the clinical experiences, as well as the theoretical framework of the clinic, connected institutional psychotherapy to a range of interdisciplinary research initiatives, which are reflected in a number of publications in the frame of Recherche. Between January 1966 and April 83, 49 issues of the journal were published, featuring topics such as prostitution, household, discipline, the history of institutional psychotherapy, including an extra special issue on Labor, neurodiversity or autism, déresonance, drugs, silent passion, masculinities, the politics of ignorance, the crimes of philosophy, and more. I was quoting like different titles of those publications. The often anonymous constellation of authors has complicated the historical reception academic analysis of this journal. So reading this 12th special issue of Recherche, I want to discuss the stakes of queer as it emerged in historical struggles against the normalizing and naturalizing politics of gender and sexuality. Even though the notion was not yet in use in the 1970s, its meaning, according to my kind of hypothesis, is implicated in the transversal aesthetic and epistemic strategies of the anonymous montage of images and texts of the issue. Providing critical tools for a social, legal, and political debate around gender and sexuality, this issue can be seen as a medium of a politics of the body, a politics not only questioning the cultural production of gender, but also the entanglements between gender, sexuality, colonialism, and labor, which I find very important here. So Recherche 12 came out in March 1973, barely a year after Anti-Oedipe, with a front second page showing Marie France in a close-up, a transgender actress and activist styled as Marilyn Monroe, with the ambiguous comment, notre cliché de couverture, as cliché in French means both cover photo and stereotype. The back cover shows Pierre Mesmer, the governor of the colonial administration in French Indochina and later French prime minister, shaking hands with the naked rugby player Walter Spanghero in a locker room. Ironically, the same Pierre Mesmer will censor the issue after its publication. The provocation queering the political spectacle is further intensified in this issue's title. 3 billion perverts was largely conceived by the Front Homosexuel d'Action Révolutionnaire, a movement of lesbian and gay activists including Yijo Kingam and Françoise Héribon, who was French feminist, labor rights activist and environmentalist. The cover reveals some resonances with the French feminist movement Le Mouvement de Libération des Femmes, echoing, actually in the cover, as I find, some resonances with Le Torchon Brûle, Des Milliers de Femmes en Révolte, which is the title of a journal of the Libération des Femmes movement, and the symbolically folded hand forming a vagina replace the male and phallic revolutionary gesture of a raised fist, as the article on Chanson des Gestes argues. Also, the female figure in the left corner with the inscription Je sème à tout vent, translated as I sow in all winds, alludes to the visual motto of the French publishing company Larousse, pointing to the dissemination of knowledge and information widely and freely in Larousse. In contrast to Larousse's staging of knowledge in the figure of an idealized feminine fertility, recherche, reappropriation introduces knowledge as a bodily and sensual experience of pleasure production and masturbation, of course. So intensely illustrated with photographs, drawings, and collages, Recherche 12 was significantly a result of collective work. Addressing with sharp irony, humor, and political exaggeration, the socially censored topics such as homosexuality, trans identity, colonialism, racism, travesty, scouting, masturbation, and pedophilia. The anonymous editorial emphasizes that these topics, and its homosexuality in particular, which is written homosexuel with il, elle, basically both included. Yeah, the anonymous editorial emphasizes that these topics require a radical subversion of the scientific methods at hand, an authentic transformation of the humanities as they are. Institutional analysis is proposed as a method of a radical decentering of scientific enunciation. However, to achieve this, the editorial argues, it is not enough to simply give voice to the censored subjects. What is much more necessary is, again a quote, to create the conditions for a total, even paroxysmal, exercise of this enunciation. To break down the barriers of established knowledge, the editorial proposes itself to subvert three regimes of censorship. And I just quote fragments from it. So the first is the pseudo-objectivism of social surveys directed against social science, and as an example is given Kinsley Report, transposed onto the sexual behavior of the French. The second is a bit longer, but I think it's the most important for my argument here because it argues against psychoanalytic manipulation of gender. I quote it, "The prejudices of psychoanalysis, which reorganize a comprehension, in fact, a psychological, topical, and economic recuperation of homosexuality, so that, in the continuation of the most traditional sexology, it contributes to be maintained within the clinical framework of perversions, implicitly justifying all forms of repression it suffers. Therefore, there will be no mention here of fixation or pre-genital, pre-Oedipal, pre-symbolic, or pre-anything stages that would define the homosexual as lacking something, at the very least, normality and morality. Far from depending on an identification with a parent of the same sex, the homosexual machination breaks with any possible adequacy to a reorganizable parental pole. Far from resolving into fixation on the similar, it is an opening to difference. The refusal of castration in the homosexual does not mean that they shrink their social responsibilities, but on the contrary, that they potentially at least attempt to expedite in their own way all the normalized identification procedures, which are at bottom only so many survivals of the most archaic rituals of submission." Yes, I marked in red 2 points which I think are really important here. So this critique of psychoanalysis, continuing the line of the most traditional sexology and this claim that a fixation on the similar needs to be transgressed by an opening to difference, but a radical opening to difference, and similar and difference are written in capital characters. So in the third aspect, I maybe quote only the Marx. Homosexuals speak on behalf of everyone, on behalf of the silent majority, and question all forms of desire production, whatever they may be. So this is also kind of refusal to speak for the minority or to give minorities a voice, right? And kind of to speak for the majority as it concerns everybody. The publication provoked a scandal and was withdrawn and destroyed a few weeks after its appearance due to offending public morals and pornography. Its second reprint was quickly censored as well and equally destroyed. Thanks to a recent reedition published by the French anarchist publisher Acrati in 2015, it is today again available and revealing anonymous montage of voices that intertwines testimonies, interviews, social criticism, images from various sources, caricatures, philosophy, literature, psychoanalysis, and institutional analysis. In a complex queering of genres and disciplines such as ethnographic report, fiction, newspaper article, diary, and a group analysis, it reclaims its lieux d'action, places of action, cafes, political meetings, prisons, asylums, psychiatric clinics, parks, and urinals. May 68 taught us to read the walls, and since then we have begun deciphering the graffiti in prisons, institutions, and today in urinals. A whole new concept of science is necessary, claims one of the articles. Authors calling for this new gay science included prominent male figures such as Deleuze, Foucault, Genet, Guattari, Hockingham, and even Sartre, as well as female intellectuals and activists such as Catherine Bergheim, Fanny Deleuze, Catherine Dedon, Marie-France, Vera Mimi, Anne Kirien, and others. What is often overlooked in the few published comments on this issue is its experimental visual design. The proclaimed origin of revolutionary energy is rooted in the formal and visual entanglement of these aesthetic choices that can be separated from it. I would like to basically, as a long conclusive remark, point to some of those aesthetic choices. So this design as a transversal practice, which I want to address, concerns primarily its montage as a strategy. The associative, heterogeneous, yet precisely constructed arrangement of the materials is introduced in a table of contents as jeu de lui, a game of the goose. It is not about mere reading, but about situations. Not about texts, but about 30 plateaus or milieus that grow into a rhizomatic playground, which configures a monstrous sexual organ. Six characters that move on the field embody minority figures: the Arab, the little boy, the woman, the teacher, the travesty, and the homosexual, le pédé. The reader are invited to give up their own identity in favor of this personnage conceptuel, linearity in favor of drifting through different stations marked by humor and disalienation, by clichés, and also by theory. Let's take one example. On field 20, Marie-France is featured, and the corresponding article is titled Anti-Striptease by Marie-France. It begins with a definition from a dictionary. I quote, "Striptease is a spectacle during which one or more women gradually undress." The anonymous author continues in this dry tone of a dictionary. I quote, "The stage castration by femme fatale, vamp, or lesbian performances ultimately only reinforces the phallocratic power of the male spectators." Marie-France's Anti-Striptease is presented as Descartes' chimera, an alternative distribution of cards in the bourgeois imaginary, which, however, as the text states, is not a collage. The article ends with a sudden exposure of Marilyn Monroe as a trans. Strange applause follows. The text is continued in an interview with Marie-France, in which the confusion to an authentic female body gives way to the concern of ending up in the psychiatric clinic Sainte Anne. A dialectical entanglement of the themes unfolded around the figure of Marie-France continues through the following article, which is titled La Femme de Drague, the woman pickup, presented as a group analytical conversation between four women. This practice of collective analysis connects themes such as availability, institution, codes, gender roles, and lesbian love with collages by feminist photographer Catherine Dodon, all, of course, anonymous. erotic graphs by Aubrey Beardsley, and the portrait of Sister Papin, a famous case of two women who in 1933 have murdered their employees' wife and daughter and were celebrated as a symbol of class struggle. Some transversal resonances with other texts, recirculating also themes such as sexism and inequality, colonialism and labor, prostitution and education, are revisited in the following text, later attributed to Guattari, which is titled To Put an End to the Massacre of the Body. One can see in the montage of this anonymous contribution, text, images, graphics, the construction of what Deleuze and Guattari have called a nonlinear coexistence or rhizome. It is shaped by the procedures of institutional analysis and group transference, to which I want to come in my conclusion, as a micropolitics of disidentification. The anonymity of the individual contributions and the journal as a whole, of course, I think we need to see also this anonymity as a tool, basically not to be censored. It's like it was very dangerous to publish this, and of course the consequences followed. But still, other research publications have this anonymity. Authors are not named, just the titles of articles. So it's not just an issue of this publication. So this anonymity and the journal as a whole allows groups, environments, and their desires to speak. The text, The Arabs and Us, stages a conversation between three young Frenchmen discussing their sexual attraction to North African men. The following article, later attributed to Deleuze, entitled Sex Paul en Acte, critically highlights the coexistence of racist and revolutionary tendencies or energies which traverse desire. In revealing both vectors, Deleuze sees desire itself as the subject of analysis, as an allusion to Wilhelm Reich's Marxist sexual politics, Sex Paul, of course, in the title. So this montage's enunciation continues in subsequent texts where the term Arab is deconstructed in favor of a linguistic and cultural community of Berber, and even the Front Homosexuel as an institution is kind of dismantled and criticized. So it's like a series of disparate articles, but which have a quality of weaving together topics and resonating with each other critically. So the series ends with a sequence of images and a text supposedly signed by Stéphane Mallarmé. The single, moreover, forged signature underscores the author's collective commitment to disidentification. When Guattari had to defend himself against charges of pornography in court, he emphasized this claim. The content was less pornographic than what was seen on television or in sex shops. It was not enough to give the affected subject a voice, but we have to create conditions for a total and radical exercise of speech, as he claimed. It was about the transversality of means operating with scientific, artistic, and poetic forms of expression. Not only in this way, quoting Foucault's speech in court on behalf of Guattari, would it be possible to reclaim the body beyond its function of labor and reproduction. The struggle for the body, as Foucault claimed, makes sexuality a political issue. To conclude, I would like to invite you to think together on the continuities, but also of some crucial ruptures this issue undertakes with Tosquet's approach. It resonates with and anticipates the 80s movement impelled by the AIDS crisis and its social neglect leading to an assemblage of microgroups which reappropriated the to-date insulting and pejorative term of queer to make of it a place for political action and resistance. As many queer feminist theorists have pointed out, historically, since its appearance in the 18th century, queer served to name whose condition of uselessness, wronging, falseness, or eccentricity might jeopardize the smooth functioning of the social machinery. Queers were liars, thieves, and drunks. As Preciado writes, queers were homosexuals, the fag and the lesbian, the travesty, the fetishist, the sadomasochist, the zoophile. The insult queer didn't have a specific content. It sought to joil all the signs of wretchedness. But starting with AIDS struggle against the social marginalization and, of course, repression of AIDS and non-normative sexualities, the activist groups such as ACT UP, Radical Furies, and Lesbian Avengers reclaim queer for its transformation into a regime of social critique and cultural intervention. Looking at those interventions, including Canguilhem and the collective organization of Recherche, I propose to analyze and affirm the political character of concepts, such as queer, but also of homosexuality and heterosexuality, historicizing but also politicizing their validity to define a social field. So comparing Tosquet's vagabonding psychiatry with the recherche, we can ask ourselves not only what's the first doing to the second, but also vice versa, what does recherche do to Tosquet? In this case, maybe a title like Queering Tosquet would be possible. Bounce, 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 bounce.